We're back, and Sam Faddis is in the house, which makes this a red letter day for us here at Securing America. Sam, among other things, you do marvelous service to our country on a continuing basis, top of your past service in uniform and without one for the CIA, with your marvelous Substack called And Magazine. And I really cannot strongly enough commend it as a resource to this audience. I hope that every one of them will subscribe. Sam, one of the things that you've written about recently is very much on my mind, and that is, well, we'll be talking later in the program with Rabbi Wilicki about what's happening at the hands, not trivially, of this administration in the Middle East, where, as we were just talking about them propping up the Chinese Communist Party, they're propping up the Iranian regime as well. Mm-hmm. But you've written recently at Substack about something you headlined as Hamas marches on our streets. Mm-hmm. The Biden administration does nothing. Talk to me about the evolving and now increasingly evident presence of the Muslim Brotherhood, its Hamas franchise, and their supporters, some of whom are what I call Sharia supremacists, some of whom are just, you know, communists, and others on the hard left. We call that the red-green axis. Right. What are they doing, and what are the implications of it inside the United States now?
Well, as with a lot of this stuff, I think the best way to get a hold of this for folks that have something else to do other than follow it all day, like average Americans, is let's just grab a hold of a concrete piece of this, okay? We saw these actions all over the United States relatively recently. They're not over. They're ongoing. I mean, blocking freeways, blocking access to airports, all kinds of activity on a really mass scale coordinated across the country. And yet somehow or another, to the extent that the mass media wants to talk about it at all, it's spontaneous uprisings of outraged people who want a ceasefire kind of thing. Okay, obviously.
Not even uprisings. I think protests is probably as much as you'll get out of the mainstream media on that. Right?
I'm sure it's mostly peaceful.
Demonstrations, you're right. Mostly.
Uprising is mostly way too inflammatory.
Depictive.
Okay. This is absurd, right? This is a coordinated effort by very large groups. If you look at New York City, within our lifetimes is the point group on this stuff. Within our lifetime refers to getting rid of Israel within our lifetime. It's a group dedicated to destroying the state of Israel. It's really
from the river to the sea, as
from the river to the sea, which Rashida means Khalib getting rid of all the Jews say. Who happen to be in the way. Yeah. It's really a branch, the local franchise of Students for Justice for Palestine, I think is okay, which does this on a national level. These organizations have been around for a while. They're affiliates of, they are front organizations for Hamas, Hezbollah, Muslim Brotherhood. This, not just some, they are explicitly, that's their business. So their express message is not just anti-Israeli, it's racist, it's, they want to kill, destroy, wipe the earth clean of Israelis, of all Jews. And the stuff that spews out of their mouth is filth. I mean, stuff these guys would have been welcome at the table with Adolf and his henchmen. That's the kind of stuff. Okay, so these guys are on our soil so entrenched that they are capable of organizing nationwide actions on this scale across the country. And this administration shows no interest, right? The FBI is working overtime to chase moms for liberty, but the existence of a broad Islamic extremist organization on this scale is of no interest to us. And when I say they're sympathetic, I mean hard, concrete connections between these guys and all sorts of terrorist organizations. There's no gray area here. This is a front apparatus, and it's happening right now. And again, it's not because the administration is trying to stop them, but failing because they don't know what they're doing. The administration is in bed with these people. In fact, we got key people in this administration who come straight out of these organizations. This is now American policy. That's how much the world has turned.
And the dangers associated with it are hard to overstate. I mean, Sam, you've spent your lifetime literally in places where these guys operate, and mm-hmm. it's no secret to you or to really anybody else who's willing to look at it that they mean it when they say death to America. And you've done yeoman work trying to point out that, going back to something you said earlier, the people we turned Afghanistan over to are back in business and being very helpful, not to us in fighting terrorism, they're being very helpful in proliferating terrorism, including inside the United States. Mm-hmm. You know, you said a couple of things that I just wanted to pick up on. The administration's embrace of these folks and literally putting into key positions, like, for heaven's sakes, the guy who is in charge of intelligence for the National Security Council.
Yes.
Mehar Bitar.
Yes.
With a very unsavory pedigree, I have to say, is a national security threat. I don't know how else to describe it. And yet there he is. And you might say a word, Sam, about having been inside this this government and the intelligence community in particular, what it means that a guy in that role is seemingly very much aligned with enemies of our country.
Yeah, well, Mehar Bitar, as you said, is the senior intel guy in the National Security Council. Okay, he comes right out of Students for Justice for Palestine, the organization I was just referring to. So he has a long pedigree of being expressly dedicated to destroying the state of Israel and of being hostile to our interests. He also affiliated with what, the UN Refugee
UNRWA.
And Works, UNRWA.
Yeah. Relief and Works. He worked for them, for heaven's sakes.
100%. He worked for them. These are the guys who theoretically are doing things like educating kids in Gaza, but what they're really doing is feeding them jihadist propaganda. These are the guys who, it turns out, one of their main offices, the main Hamas communications center, was underneath their office, the access tunnel to Hamas's nerve center, under their space. That doesn't mean Hamas, folks, that doesn't mean Hamas secretly dug a tunnel under their building. It means the access that they were providing cover to and access to this. This guy worked for them. He comes from an anti-Israeli organization. He's a Hamas supporter, a Hezbollah supporter. He's our senior intel guy in the National Security Council. He sees everything.
Everything, and is also giving direction to the intelligence community, as well as filtering what he sees to pass it into his own system. I mean, this is, again, and Sam, you have done such indispensable work documenting how people like this, notably at our accountabilityinitiative.org platform, are real threats to the country. I don't know how else to put it. Lastly, let me just say, I woke up this morning to National Public Radio featuring a guy by the name of Trita Parsi as a person commenting on this Israeli response to the attack on them by Iran. This guy has been described by the mullahs as part of the Iran lobby.
Yes.
He's been inside the wire. He was inside the negotiations, for heaven's sakes, on the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. This is an influence operator for our enemy. And again, it's just unbelievable that, a publicly financed media, no less, is promoting the idea that this guy is just a sort of objective think tank guy on Iran. Sam, we need so desperately the clarity that you bring to all of these matters. We appreciate you doing it here with us and in the course of today's very important Committee on the Present Danger China webinar. I know you'll keep up the good work. Come back to us next week if you would. We'll be right back with more right after this. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Overnight, Israel's military retaliated for massive Iranian missile and drone attacks launched against the Jewish state last weekend. At this point, the magnitude and impact of the Israeli response is unclear. But the fact that the Iranian regime is still in business suggests it was tailored to minimize further conflicts with the Biden administration, now increasingly probably working to defend the mullahs, as well as their jihadist proxies in Gaza, Lebanon, and Yemen. At this point, there is only one response to the wider regional war. Team Biden laughably says it is determined to prevent, but that is actually being relentlessly waged against Israel by all the aforementioned. The Israelis must use to the fullest their might and skills to assist the former Shah's son Reza Pahlavi in his intensifying efforts to help the people of Iran finally liberate their country. This is Frank Affney. Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Affney, the program that's a kind of owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to the glory of God and his kingdom. We have with us a man who I consider to be one of the most important, savants about the state of the world in which we find ourselves. His name is Charles Sam Faddis. I couldn't be more proud to say he is a regular featured guest here, usually about this time each week, as well as a senior fellow of our Center for Security Policy. As always, I hope you will take a look at the work we do there, centerforsecuritypolicy.org, and give us a hand with it, if you would, financially. Sam is a man who served his country with great distinction in a couple of capacities, one that is particularly relevant to our topic today, though. Is he worked for the Central Intelligence Agency for most of his 20 years undercover in some very dangerous places around the world. We will never adequately be able to express our appreciation for all of that. But also, in his last year or so, he was in headquarters in Langley and had the responsibility of trying to protect our country against weapons of mass destruction terrorism. And that would be things like, nuclear weapons or radiological weapons or biological weapons or chemical weapons. And what we want to visit with him about today, first and foremost, is a very important report that's been released recently by the bipartisan House Select Committee on the Strategic Competition with the Chinese Communist Party that had some very important findings about a particularly lethal kind of chemical weapon, fentanyl. Sam Faddis, welcome back. It's always good to have you with us, my friend.
Always great to be here, Frank. Thank you.
So let's drill down on this, if you would. Again, you were in the front lines fighting these sorts of things. Fentanyl emerged after you left that position, mm-hmm. but give us a quick appreciation of the Chinese Communist Party's role in waging what the committee calls drug warfare against our country and the effects.
Well, the effects are devastating, right? I mean, everybody accepts that at least 100,000 Americans a year are dying of fentanyl. That's another one of those numbers, kind of like the number of illegals in the country that gets fixed in the public consciousness, and then somehow we never update it. So it's way north of 100,000. It's getting worse every day. It's not getting better. It's destroying communities. And if you look at the DEA sites and places, you'll see that this is happening all over America. So it's not just happening in a bad neighborhood in a big city. It's destroying small towns. It's everywhere, and kids are dying in huge numbers. All this stuff, basically, I mean, the fentanyl itself in final form comes out of Mexico, where it's cooked in what are euphemistically referred to as factories. All the precursor chemicals come from China. The Chinese have a massive industrial scale operation where they provide all the precursor chemicals. So it's not happening because some of their stuff gets diverted or they don't quite know where it's ending up. No, this they are doing this, the Chinese Communist Party. I mean, this is a totalitarian regime that can lock down an entire city and tell 10 million people you can't leave your apartment. But we're supposed to believe that accidentally all of this. I mean, come on. This is a Chinese operation, and they are in cooperation with the drug cartels, and they're killing north of 100,000 Americans a year. And officially, this administration is sort of pretending either that it's not happening, or if it is happening, the Chinese, I don't know, don't know about it. I'm not quite sure.
Well, in a way, it's worse than that. They're pretending that the Chinese Communist Party will be part of the solution to this problem. And on that basis, Sam, as you know, they are persisting in their more general policy of engaging with the Chinese Communists and propping them up to boot. So when you look at this, Sam, again, from your particular background, I'm interested in talking about the extent to which this is, in fact, chemical warfare being deliberately waged against us by a mortal enemy of the United States, not only with impunity, and as you say, on the basis of ramping it up, but with the compliance or acquiescence or accommodations of our own government. The committee said in their report that this is the equivalent of losing a plane full of 200 people every single day.
Right.
It's just hard to get your head around that there isn't somebody in our government who is saying this is a mortal threat to our country and an act of war, for that matter. Your thoughts?
I think this brings us back to a point that you and I discuss often, Frank, in regard to a number of issues that are going on right now, which is this is not weak need. This is not incompetent. This is not feckless. That would be the good news, people, if all you were looking at was that you had a government that didn't know what it was doing. In fact, you have a government, I mean, there's certainly lots of incompetence, but you have a government that's doing exactly what it intends. I mean, this is a government, just as absurd, a government that gave Afghanistan to the Taliban and now says with a straight face that the Taliban are helping us with counterterrorism. And they can actually say that without cracking a smile or breaking into hysterics. I mean, what? So the communist Chinese are poisoning us, staging a weapons of mass destruction attack, I think is a good way to phrase it, killing over 100,000 Americans a year. But the Chinese are going to help us stop it. What? The Chinese are doing this to us very deliberately. They're not secret ships sneaking out of harbors in China and smuggling stuff away. And Xi Jinping is gnashing his teeth saying, oh, my God, I wish I could stop that. Come on. This is their attack on America. And yes, you're right. We're not just failing to stop it. We're facilitating it, really.
Sam, one other piece of the committee's report that was important, I think, and again, maybe gobsmacking, is that in addition to, you know, knowingly doing this and intensifying the effort, the Chinese Communist Party is said to be profiting from it as well. So it's a twofer. They get to kill us in vast numbers. And again, just for calibration purposes, let's say, I think we lost something like 55,000 people in what it was, a decade or so of the Vietnam War.
Correct.
And remember what a disastrous impact that was on our people, our society, our polity.
Right.
And here we have 100,000, roughly twice that number, every single year being killed by the Chinese, and they are getting rich doing it to us. Sam, how could this be, and what could be done about it, having been in that business?
Well, what could be done about it is it could be shut down in relatively short order. I mean, we could start by regaining control of the border. I mean, asserting control of the border, because we're, again, that's a deliberate policy decision to not have a border. So you could stop that. You could make this, obviously, a immediate concrete issue in U.S.-Chinese relations. Hey, this is kind of a big deal to us that you're killing 100,000 Americans a year. So in response, here are some really serious things we're going to do to force you to respond. I mean, as with most stuff, Frank, right, it's these days, it's not that there's, you'd really have to get the brain trust together to figure out what to do. The solutions are obvious. I mean, how do you control the border? I don't know. When Joe Biden wasn't in the White House, we had control over the border.
Let's do it again. We'll be right back with more with Sam Faddis. Stay tuned.
Night after night, in cities across the country, black garbed assailants clash with police in the streets, smash windows, and throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa and provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
We're back, and it's a delight to say that we are joined by one of our distinguished other members of the Committee on the Present Danger, China. He would be a man of many parts, in fact, both a distinguished military officer, having risen through the ranks in the United States Marine Corps to that of colonel, which is a very big deal. He is also a former Foreign Service officer, as well as a successful entrepreneur and businessman based in East Asia. His name is Colonel Grant Newsom. As I said, United States Marine Corps retired. He is the author most recently of a very important, very timely book entitled When China Attacks, A Warning to America. Colonel Newsom, it's good to have you aboard, sir. As always, welcome.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here.
In the previous block, I was talking a bit with our friend Sam Faddis, about the report that came out of the House Select Committee on the strategic competition between the United States and the Chinese Communist Party. This report about fentanyl and how it is being used for the purposes, in the committee's words, of drug warfare against the United States is something I know you've been tracking and writing about for 4 or 5 years or so. Tell us what you make of the fact that finally somebody in the United States government is owning up to the proposition that the Chinese Communist Party is not our friend in managing this problem. It is the source of the problem.
Oh, yes. It's always good to have both Republicans and Democrats, as we saw on this committee, come together and say fentanyl is a creature of the Chinese. communists, and they are directly involved in exporting it and getting it into the United States, where it killed over 70,000 Americans last year. The overall total of Americans killed by fentanyl is well over 500,000. But when you finally have, as I say, this bipartisan announcement, and in much detail about what the Chinese communists are doing, that ought to get some attention. Unfortunately, there's a good chunk of people on Capitol Hill, and you can guess which party, who don't care. All that they are after is power. But to have really some decent people on this committee say what is going on, that is significant. Yes, it took a lot of time, but that's often the way it works with us.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned Capitol Hill. I guess I'm even more troubled about an administration that persists in thinking that engagement with the Chinese Communist Party is the way forward. We had Janet Yellen, of course, making a tour of Beijing again, kowtow tour, I call it. We've got the president of the United States all in, I think it's fair to say. Though there was this recent development about tripling the tariffs on steel. And I wonder what you make of that, Colonel. Does that signal a departure from the engagement school? Is he becoming Donald Trump at the moment when the two will be meeting on the campaign trail?
No, I think the tariffs which were announced on Chinese steel don't really matter very much at all. I think this is a political move. It's designed to get over the really the humiliating treatment meted out to our friends, the Japanese, by President Biden and his crowd rejecting Nippon Steel's bid to buy U.S. steel. We tell them they're our great friends. We give Mr. Kishida a great time. And at the same time, we're telling you, but we don't like you enough to let you buy one of our companies. This is a way, I think, of trying to make it up to the Japanese a little bit. But they've gotten the message, but also to appear tough. But the actual reality is this won't do much. But back to the fentanyl.
And just before we go back to fentanyl, why won't it do much? I think they're dumping steel, are they not, in this country as they have? Oh, I'm sorry. It's not dumping. It's overproduction.
That's right. And overproduction is also a pretty good war reserve. If you need to, nobody thinks about that much, but if you need to beef up your production because you're in a war, well, you've got the factories to do it. You have the lines to build stuff. Actually, the amount, as I've been told by the guys who understand this stuff, that this is not a big deal at all, what they've done to the Chinese. But if I could go back to fentanyl, it is important. It's an important point, is that you have the Congressional Committee lay out in detail what the Chinese are doing to promote and support fentanyl exports into the United States. And then you have the administration's approach to dealing with this, which is to set up a working group with the Chinese to meet with them, to talk with them about maybe stopping the flow of fentanyl, if they even are able to do it, if they know something about it. Instead of playing tough, we are just acting like absolute morons.
Yeah, patsies.
It's disgraceful.
Yeah. Well, and I think it has to be said, Colonel, doing so makes the administration complicit in the murder of, 70,000 this year and whatever it was last year. I'm told it may even be as high as 100,000 this year. But it's staggeringly malfeasant on the part of our administration, is it not?
No, it is. The Chinese have suffered no negative consequences, no punishment for what they've done, none. And that tells you everything. In fact, during the course of our interview here, about 4 or 5 Americans are going to die. And nobody does a thing about it.
Right. Now, one of the stunning facts was that the committee assesses it's like losing a jetliner full of 200 people every single day. It's just astonishing. As we speak, we're going to be doing a program on the fentanyl issue as part of our Committee on the Present Danger China webinar series. And folks, I just want to encourage you Go to centerforsecuritypolicy.org, follow the work of the committee. We're proud to sponsor it with our friend Brian Kennedy and the American Strategy Group. It frankly needs your support, and I hope you'll consider doing it at centerforsecuritypolicy.org. Also, subscribe to the webinars, which frequently feature our guest, Colonel Grant Newsom. Colonel, let me switch gears with you a little bit. You, of course, reside in the forward deployed Japanese islands. I'm not sure whether this is happening there or not, but I understand that what is happening massively in our own country, namely the penetration of its borders by large numbers of seemingly predominantly unaccompanied fighting age males, some of whom walk and talk and quack like the People's Liberation Army. But I'm being told now, that on the island of Guam and also on the the Philippine islands, where we have two bases being built up for cooperation between U.S. forces and those of the Philippines, we're seeing some of these guys turn up as well. What do you make of that, and what should we be doing about it, sir?
Well, the first thing we should do is make it harder to get in. We're not doing that. Now, speaking about Guam, yes, they have been facing sort of illegal Chinese entrants coming in from Saipan, which is fairly near. And they have picked up Chinese in the jungles around U.S. air bases. The Chinese have been there a long time on Guam, actually buying up real estate. Just happens to be near the American military headquarters. But what
I'm sure that's purely coincidental, don't you think?
Of course, it always is. And the what you have there is the Chinese are taking advantage of a rule which allows visa-free entry into nearby Saipan, Commonwealth of Northern Marianas, which is American territory. So they get in there, they make arrangements to get over to Guam illegally, by a small boat, etc., get dropped off, and there you go. But once they're in Saipan, and they really have a very negative effect, harmful effect on the society, drug dealing, all sorts of criminal activity, bribing officials, you're just breaking down the society. And it's a very pro-America place, where we even have an air base nearby on Tinian, and that you've got this Chinese presence, and they're allowed into the country visa-free, because the Department of Homeland Security allows it. They could stop it with really like a two-sentence memo. They won't do it. And so they get in and they're in the wire. You can see the effects they're having out in the Pacific, and it's what we're going to experience here. In fact, we already are.
Yeah. Well, on Guam, of course, we have major facilities as well.
Those, and you will have a very hard time fighting a war in the Western Pacific.
You know, you mentioned the Department of Homeland Security, and it was rather stunning, I must say. Not surprising, yes, but stunning that the United States Senate did not even engage in a proper trial of Alejandro Mayorkas, the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, who had been impeached by the House for precisely this kind of behavior. I again would call it malfeasance. I don't know how else to discuss it, except perhaps as high crimes and misdemeanors. And your personal insight, Colonel Newsom, about the extent to which it is not only obviously a threat to our military installations and personnel and operations to have these Chinese all over the place, but corrosive to the societies and, you know, bribing officials and the like. This is unconscionable, it seems to me, and a strategic problem that further adds to what I believe is a record of high crimes and misdemeanors by this secretary. Colonel, we have to leave it at that for the moment. So much more to talk with you about. I hope you'll come back to us next week for a further update on all of this. The tragedy is that what's so clear in your understanding and your comments and your book, of course, When China Attacks, is was being so studiously ignored by our government to our peril. Thank you, Colonel. Come back to us again soon. God bless you and the great work you do with us as a senior fellow of the Center for Security Policy. We'll be right back with more. Stay tuned. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Overnight, Israel's military retaliated for massive Iranian missile and drone attacks launched against the Jewish state last weekend. At this point, the magnitude and impact of the Israeli response is unclear. But the fact that the Iranian regime is still in business suggests it was tailored to minimize further conflicts with the Biden administration, now increasingly probably working to defend the mullahs, as well as their jihadist proxies in Gaza, Lebanon, and Yemen. At this point, there is only one response to the wider regional war Team Biden laughably says it is determined to prevent, but that is actually being relentlessly waged against Israel by all the aforementioned. The Israelis must use to the fullest their might and skills to assist the former Shah's son Reza Pahlavi in his intensifying efforts to help the people of Iran finally liberate their country. This is Frank Affney. We're back, and it is one of the greatest pleasures that I have in this program where I get to introduce our next guest. He is the star of his own television program, now on Real America's Voice, a television network on which we are very privileged to have Securing America appear. His name is Rabbi Pesach Walicki. The program is called Eyes on Israel. It runs at 3 p.m. Sundays, and we look forward with great expectation to his analysis of what has been happening in his native land, now adopted homeland, I should say, Israel, and in the region. There's been a lot going on, and we will talk about it in some detail today. I did want to just say, in addition to all of that, he is a prime mover behind Israel 365 News, a very important outlet in Israel. He stands shoulder to shoulder on a podcast of that name. He is also a frequent contributor to the Jerusalem Post and other publications, an information warrior par excellence, and desperately needed at a time such as this. And last but not least, he is also a principal in a very important new coalition, which our Center for Security Policy is proud to be partnering in, called Keep God's Land. And if we have time, we'll have a quick word about that with Rabbi Walicki. It's good to have you back, Pesach. Welcome once again, my friend.
Thank you, Frank. It's always an honor to be with you.
Thank you. Overnight, as we speak, the forces of the Israeli military struck in some form or fashion targets of some kind in Iran. Here in the States, at least, we don't have a good fix on what exactly was undertaken. Can you shed any light on the extent and the damage done by these strikes?
Well, the damage was not that extensive, Frank, but the targets were very carefully chosen to send a message. They were quite internal. They were quite far in, and they showed Israel's precision ability. And look, we have to, you know, you're not going to find anyone more hawkish than me. But at the same time, we have to recognize that retaliation always means that you're operating on the timing and intensity set by your enemy who attacked you. And Israel right now is fighting a multi-front war. The other fronts in this war are also against Iran. It's not like this would be a brand new thing. Oh, Iran attacked us. Hezbollah firing rockets at us every day is Iran attacking us. And I say, and I single out Hezbollah because as opposed to Hamas that is funded by the Iranians and the Qataris and others, Hamas is the Muslim Brotherhood. They get funding from Iran and therefore they take some direction from them. So we call them a proxy. Hezbollah is not a proxy of Iran. Hezbollah is Iran. It's essentially a branch more than a proxy. And then so
an arm of, I guess, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps.
They are Iran. So therefore, and I bring this up to frame what happened last night, because we have to realize that, again, as hawkish as I am, and we know that we have to deal with the Iranian threat at some point, we also have to deal with Rafah. We also have to deal with Hezbollah in the north. And it, and whether, and to what extent Israel retaliates against what Iran did has to do with Israel's national security concerns and their strategic goals in the current context. And
but let me just for purposes of calibration, if I can, Rabbi, this it's the subject of a commentary that I did today, which you can find, folks, at securing the Secure Freedom Minute, I should say, rather, at centerforsecuritypolicy.org. I encourage you to subscribe. You'll get my daily assessment of what we are facing. But I just want to make sure for purposes of, I guess, level setting, you've just described what seems to be a wide regional war. And we're being told by the Biden administration that Israel must restrain itself at every turn, lest there be a wider, I guess they would call it a regional war. It's hard to imagine this getting a whole lot wider in terms of the geography now that Iran is fully in the mix, not just through proxies and arms and so on elsewhere. But would you describe this as a wide regional war at the moment?
Well, I would, and I would agree with your assessment. And it's actually a very, there's a silver lining here, which is it can't really get much wider. And here's what I mean. We already have the Saudis and the Jordanians participating in Israel's defense. Now, they'll never participate in our offense, nor do we want them to. The Egyptians staying out of it. No one paying attention can imagine the Egyptians getting involved. Syria basically doesn't exist. I mean, they're just kind of a pass through for the Iranians and ISIS and whoever else operates there. They have no actual power to wage war on anybody. So the truth is, this is about as wide a regional war as it can get. Of course, no one in the Gulf is going to get involved in anything. So these fears of a wider regional war are silly, because this is the war. The war is Iran, its proxies, and its branches, whatever we can argue over nomenclature, as I just mentioned. But basically, this is it. And therefore, in that context, let's remember, the purpose of retaliation, if this was just a one-off, like suddenly they jump in, they do something, and the purpose of retaliation is deterrence. This is, but when you're at war, and this was worked out, I did a little plug for my show, and thank you for plugging the show in the intro. In this coming Sunday's Eyes on Israel, we're going to devote half of the episode. We usually do four different subjects in the four blocks. We're devoting half of the episode to a special report on what's going on in Iran with someone who I've recommended you have on your program. I hope you'll have him soon, Major Elliot Chodov, who's really one of the great experts on Iran and a great military analyst in Israel. And we really break down everything that's going on here. And he made a very important point, which is that when you're at war, your goal isn't deterrence anymore. When you're at war, your goal is defeating the enemy, and you have to keep your strategic goals all in mind. And Israel, you know, doing what we'd all want them to do, like, you know, hitting Iran's nuclear facilities or whatever it is, would not necessarily serve Israel's immediate strategic goals. Yes, we have to deal with Iran at some point, but this may not be the right time.
Okay, let's tease down on that in just a moment. We'll be right back with Rabbi Pesach Wilicki, the star and host of Eyes on Israel and so much more. Stay tuned for his analysis of the U.S. government's role in all of this at the moment. Be right back. We're back. Rabbi Pesach Walicki is in the house, a good friend of mine and of this program. We're always delighted to catch up with him. He has made a recommendation for other sources. We look forward to having them on in the days to come. But I've got you now, which is great, Pesach. I did want to just ask another question about the modulation of this response by Israel to the massive attack, as you've pointed out, the massive attack that the Iranians launched at Israel over the weekend. Praise God, and largely thanks to the IDF and some help from us, and as you say, even the Jordanians and I guess the Saudis and the Brits, it didn't do a lot of damage, but it wasn't for want of trying. I think that's fair to say. The response by Israel has been similarly restrained. You've mentioned that there may be strategic reasons Israel is doing that. I wonder whether it might also have something to do with the fact that the Biden administration is incessantly, it seems, trying to pull Israel back. In Israel, in its fight with Hamas, that is to say, and Hezbollah, and now Iran. Even the Houthis, I think, are getting a pass to some extent at the hands of an administration here that seems determined to defend Israel's enemies as much as it is Israel. Am I right or not?
Yeah, look, the Biden administration has still never even mentioned, it's never come from any of their lips or any statements calling out Iran for its funding of Hamas. They've never mentioned it. And we know that they've been working since day one to enrich Iran by not enforcing sanctions and by trying to re-enter the Iran nuclear deal. And we know about people like Mali. They have, you know, they're working on behalf of Iran. They do not want Israel defeating Iran. I mentioned this in the event that you and I jointly spoke at together with Colonel Alan West last Sunday. I mentioned the fact that these megalomaniacs and this, you know, these CIA types, the regime, the Biden regime and their globalist cronies, they don't want Israel to be secure from its enemies because then they become rendered irrelevant. They want this balance here and they want to prop up the Iranians and make sure that they're strong, even though the Iranians swear that they're the mortal enemies of the United States. It's baffling that Joe Biden actually said that the U.S. would not only not participate in, but not support an Israeli retaliation of at scale against the Iranians. But look, they're trying to protect the mullahs in Iran. That's, you know, they're not I can no longer say safely that at the administration level, not at the people level, that the United States is an ally of Israel.
Wow, this is stunning and shocking as well. I just want to say it was great to be with you in that program with Alan West last week. And I want to thank Rob Sigg and his team at Real America's Voice for actually live streaming the whole thing. And I hope that people will go check it out if you didn't catch it when it ran. Rabbi, let me just ask you a bit. The commitment of the Biden administration to this monstrous Iranian regime has never been clear. I personally think it's got to do with corruption as well as a fantastic view of the world in which Iran's hegemony would be a good thing for American interests. But there's stuff going on inside Iran, and I know you've been following it closely. Talk a little bit about it, which makes all the more bizarre what we're doing here.
Well, thank you for asking that, Frank. This is really important for people to understand context here. Just last night or early this morning, it was reported in the Israeli media. I haven't seen it yet in Western media. I saw it just now. I saw it picked up. Israeli media got picked up that in a prominent member of the Iranian women's national volleyball team. And I know that for us here, for people in the West, what national volleyball, but it's actually a very big sport in Iran. A prominent member of the national volleyball team by the name of Mobina Rostami put up a post on her Instagram saying that she's ashamed of the Iranians. She says, "As an Iranian, I am truly ashamed of the authorities' attack on Israel, but you need to know that the people in Iran love Israel and hate the Islamic Republic." And after she posted this, her social media accounts were deleted, and she has now gone missing. She is nowhere to be found. And she's not the only prominent athlete in Iran recently and over the last few years who has voiced not only opposition to the Iranian regime, but also support for Israel with grave consequences. And she knew that these would be the consequences. This type of bravery speaks to the weakness of the regime. But more importantly, and this
and
I have not seen
the courage of this woman.
And this I have not seen reported anywhere, but I have it on very reliable sources connected to the IDF, that internally in Iran, between Israel's Damascus strike on the Iranian consulate and the Iranian strike on Israel, in those few days in between them, there the rebel militias in Iran, you know, there's all kinds of ethnic rebel militias. You know, the Iranian population is only about 55% Persian. And then you have these other ethnicities, and most of them are anti-regime and not Islamist. And the rebel militias in Iran carried out a number of successful attacks with casualties against the regime. And it was starting to spread within Iran. And the Iranians were flexing their muscles and trying to divert attention away from that with the attack on Israel, and also, of course, tamping down the rebels. But this activity is increasing. People must realize that the Iranian regime is weak internally right now, and the failure to inflict significant damage or any, I mean, there was one injured girl and a little bit of cosmetic damage to an Israeli airbase. The fact that their attacks on Israel failed so miserably, which humiliated them in the Arab world, coupled with the fact that you now see prominent athletes and the rebel militias getting more and more active, the Iranian regime is teetering, but the Biden administration is still allowing them to sell their oil to China, which means they're still enriching them and still funding terrorists.
Still propping them up. Rabbi, we have to leave it at that. This is a very important development. I had not heard about rebel militias inside Iran. I know there's been restive Baluchis and Kurds.
Just
and
the
so
last
on,
few weeks, Frank. Just
this
the last
is huge.
Few weeks.
This is Heating huge. Up. And it just makes all the more clear what I said in my commentary, I think, and that is that Israel must help the people of Iran liberate themselves from this odious regime that represses those people and threatens both of us. God bless you, my friend. Good luck with the show this weekend. We'll look forward to talking with you next week.
Thank you very much, Frank.
The rest of you joining us, come back to us again next time. Until then, go forth and multiply. Yes, and happy Passover to you too.